Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, otherwise known as Mark Sanchez Superfan. And joining me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, the box office, records, they keep a-falling. Your thoughts, sir, on It finishing only $9 million behind Kingsman the Golden Circle.
Yeah, so
a film that you have not yet seen.
Yeah, I have not seen Kingsman yet. I mean, I haven't seen It yet either, but one of those things is not going to happen.
No, you're not seeing it yet. We've established this on the podcast.
Never happened. So I knew Kingsman was number one, but I never looked at the numbers until I was putting this together. And I was like, $39 million.
It's about $3 million above what the $2 or $3 million above what the first one did.
Yeah, see, I figured it was. So I was like, you know, not 39. That's fine for this. I don't know what the studio was expecting, but I'm like, okay, that looks good. And then I saw what its numbers was, and I'm like, that sucker made $30 million. Been out for 3 weeks. There's another major release. You would think it would finally get. I mean, I knew it was gonna be number two, but only $9 million behind. So
the highest grossing R-rated movie not adjusted for inflation ever.
So one, it tells me that, I mean, it really is, you know, no pun intended, a monster, and people really, really like it, that it keeps making this amount of money 3 weeks out. And then it kind of tapered what I thought about Kingsman a little bit, because it's that close to It, and I would have figured there'd be a bigger gap there.
Part of that to me is, honestly, their marketing. They did not do an awesome job. I felt like they did a great job with the first one, marketing it and distinguishing it and branding it basically as counter-programming to 50 Shades. Mm-hmm. And getting it out there. It's not that way. It did not do near the marketing. The marketing was not nearly as effective this time. And also, like, I think it's just beneficial to keep putting these movies in smaller months. February, you know, February, August, September, you know, slower months that you where you can still make money. No one saw it coming. No one anticipated it being this thing. It benefits from a lot of things, including a hunger for Stranger Things. The movie very much echoes a lot of Stranger Things, especially with the kid dynamic, and it shares a star from one of from Stranger Things. It also benefits from great word of mouth. Everybody who sees that movie comes out of it talking extremely positively. And we're in the fall season where, you know, we're about to have Freeform, previously known as ABC Family, previously known as the Family Channel, doing their 13 Nights of Halloween. You know, we're in that season of, like, you know, horror. There's a Jigsaw movie coming out. It's trying to revive the Saw franchise all these years later. Like, we're in that season where these kinds of movies work really well. And here you have a really, really, really well done movie. And it's in the horror genre. And it's in the fall. And it's doesn't have a lot of audience in common with Kingsman. And it's just being really well received and really supported, the way that Split was being really well received and really, really well supported in January after people found out that it was, you know, Unbreakable sequel. So, or spinoff. So, I'm happy for it. I'm happy for Stephen King adaptations. We got a couple of more Stephen King adaptations coming on Netflix over the course of the rest of the year, one of which just got some huge praise this week from its preview screenings for critics. And another one in 1922, which is also going to be released on Netflix. It hasn't screened for critics yet, but looks to be garnering some real attention. So it's maybe one of those years where we get really good Stephen King adaptations. Kingsman, other than the lack of marketing, for me, and I can only just speak to for me, it is the same movie with not near the amount of heart, and it feels like every action sequence is there to try and top the church sequence. There is not, for me, enough flushing out of the characters around Eggsy and Merlin and and Colin Firth. Because, like, the Statesmen are just kind of there. Tatum is literally on ice for three-fourths of his time on screen. Halle Berry has a good... steals everything that she's in, and they give her a piece there at the end, but, like, that's to set up something that's coming down the road. You know, Jeff Bridges is basically a cameo. Elton John is a cameo, but it's funny. And the villain is well written, and you can very much see her point of view and perspective outside of, you know, forcing henchmen to, you know, murder each other. But it's a great commentary, social commentary, as the first one was, but it just does not have the heart, the beating heart that was at the center of that first movie. And I think for me, it just became eventually sound and noise signifying nothing. And I'm perfectly okay if I don't get a third Kingsman. So,
yes, that I've heard a lot of what you said and everything else I read, which is part of the reason why I didn't go rush out to see it this weekend.
It's a lot of noise, man. A lot of noise, and a lot, and like you literally start with your set piece and you do not stop for like the first 45 minutes, and it's like, can we please take a breath here?
So, I mean, I'm going to see it. I'll probably see it, like, in the next week or so. But the reviews were, most people are like, you know, it's okay. Nobody, I didn't really see anybody say it's, like, really bad.
No, but it's not bad. The set pieces themselves are not bad, taken as an individual basis. It's just the sheer overwhelming mm-hmm. volume of them. And, you know, that third act just feels like it kind of just, like, takes forever. You know, it's fun, but it doesn't have the heart that the first one did.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. So,
and it'll run, because, I mean, until we get to October, we don't really have a whole lot of, like, brand name. Even the stuff that they debuted at TIFF earlier in the month is not hitting, most of it's not hitting theaters to November. So, I mean, you know, you got the Jigsaw movie coming out in October. I think there's another Conjuring movie about the nun that's supposed to come out in November or October. There's not that overwhelming, like, mm-hmm. huge thing that's going to just run through October, which could leave room for both It and Ninjago and Kingsman to kind of make some money. Ninjago, okay. Obviously, it's been done before on Cartoon Network, and honestly, the Cartoon Network adaptation's funner. This didn't appear. It didn't seem to me that they nailed the marketing on this one the way they did for the previous two.
No,
and it didn't. And it seemed like their demographics that they were targeting were a lot more narrow for this than there were for the previous two.
Yeah, the selling. Well, the telling part about this is, you know, again, I have an 8-year-old, and all she does is she watches Disney Channel and Cartoon Network and all this stuff, and I know she wants to see it because she has mentioned that she wants to see it. And she's normally right on top of these dates. Like, she knows when they're coming up. This weekend passed, like, to this date, to right now, she has not said a word about this movie. And it's been 4 or 5 days. I'm sure as soon as she sees another commercial, she'll be like, oh, when did that come out? But she has no clue. So if she doesn't, and she's like their target audience, like, watches all the cartoons, ready to see these movies, she had no idea that it came and could potentially go. So, yeah, their marketing on this was not the greatest. I don't know what to expect from it. I'm not really expecting much from the movie. I expect it to be, you know, I don't expect to fall asleep. That's kind of like where my expectation is. And if that happens, then I'm fine. And she likes it, I'm fine, but I'm not expecting it to be the Lego Movie or Lego Batman.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. That's about to come on HBO
or yeah, something. Yeah, well, it was February. It came out in February, so it'd be about right for it to start showing up on premium.
Yeah, because, you know, every now and then HBO does these commercials where these things are coming, and that was one of them. So that'll be fun for me to have up there.
Before we get off of box office, your thoughts on Spider-Man Homecoming? surpassing Guardians of the Galaxy at the international worldwide box office.
So, while it did not make $1 billion, for Spider-Man to finish as the highest-grossing comic book movie to date, as of right now, that's got to be considered...
Well, there's only one more to come.
There's two. Thor and Justice League.
That's two, yeah.
So,
I keep forgetting about that pesky Justice League movie.
Yeah. Nope. Not doing this. I am not going down that road. But, yeah, for it to be number one as of right now, that's got to be a win. And like I said before, I think it's just a hangover from the other movies that kind of held this one back. But when more people got wind of it, they...
Thank you, China.
Yeah, China came in and put it over the top. And it's funny that they put it over the top like right now, because Homecoming comes out on streaming tomorrow. So this is like right at the end. Even though, while that's the case, Wonder Woman is still making money in the movies, and that's been out on streaming for a month. So there's that. But it's a nice little validation for Spider-Man, particularly since, you know, when the movie was released, it was like, you know, it's the lowest Spider-Man outside of the Amazings and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But now, you know, it's a nice little notch in his belt.
Yeah, it's going to finish above the two. It's already finished above the two Mark Webb films, and it's sitting solidly behind Amazing Spider-Man, behind the Sam Raimi Spider-Man and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3.
I think worldwide, I think the only one that's behind right now is just 3.
Which came closest to making $1 billion.
Yeah.
And Avi will tell you that's because Venom was in the movie.
And Avi's a... moron is the correct word, right? Yeah, I think so. I think it's behind only 3. But, yeah. Now, wow. Finding that out, I saw the worldwide numbers, like, for the whole year. And, you know, we had $3 billion movies?
Yeah. Beauty and the Beast, Fate of the Furious, and Wolfman 2.
No.
I know Wolfman 2 is like in the top 5, which is very disconcerting for a purely Chinese release. It's made like $2 million in the United States, it's made 800 and something million internationally.
Yeah, I didn't even know what this movie was, so I started looking at it. So I'm like, what is this thing? And yeah, $2 million there, but it's made 870 worldwide. It's number 5 worldwide, only following those $2 billion movies. Spider-Man Homecoming is at number 4. And the third one, which would be the third $1 billion movie, that just completely just snuck in there, and people were like, have no clue they did it.
Despicable Me 3.
That's it.
Minions, man. Those Minions are $1 billion properties. Just slap those Minions on somewhere, and they will make you $1 billion.
But, so I like those movies. I like the Minions. I like everything about those movies. I saw the third one, and I like Balthazar Black Brat, the villain, but I fell asleep in that movie because it was, I'll just say,
it wasn't quite Secret Life of Pets worthy, but it was not up to the standard of...
It's not up to the Despicable Me standard.
Right.
It's better than Secret Life of Pets.
Which is Toy Story with dogs.
Yes. And I was just,
like, to the point where I'm like very surprised, like, Pixar did not consider copyright creative infringement.
I mean, why is it worth it? I mean they made enough money to keep going, but
They made Secret Life of Pets finish as one of the top 5 highest grossing movies of last year.
Was it?
Yes.
Hold on, I gotta look this up. I'm just so shocked by Despicable Me, not just because I fell asleep in it, but just that you didn't really hear, like, it came and you didn't really hear a lot about it through the whole week, because it came like in the middle of
July. And it's like the second weekend of July. Homecoming was right around there.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman was still riding big.
It's like right between, it was like Wonder Woman, Transformers, Despicable Me, Spider-Man. Like, all of those were all right around each other. And, Transformers lost. Wonder Woman was a big winner. We find out Spider-Man's a big winner. But Despicable Me just kind of sitting there like...
We're a big winner too.
Yeah, but nobody knows. Like, nobody's talking about us, but... You know, we're here, and we're doing stuff. Let's see if I can find this real quick. But that is insane if Secret Life of Pets made it that high up. 2016, what are you?
I mean, I'm interested to see where, you know, just overall the, you know, An American Assassin continues to be dead on arrival, which is appropriate because that movie is garbage. it's worse than the Jack Ryan movie with Chris Pine. That's how bad that movie is.
Well, I forgot that was even a movie.
Yeah, totally was.
I can't find worldwide right now, but it was number 4 for domestic. Mm-hmm. It beat out Jungle Book and Deadpool. Mm-hmm. And Zootopia. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going down those rabbit holes again, so you can just imagine.
Yeah, Dawn of Justice. Yeah, yeah.
It's only the two of the $1 billion movies. I don't know about Finding Dory, but it's Rogue One, Finding Dory, and Civil War, and then Secret Life of Freaking Pets. Uh-huh. And that is just upsetting.
That is a thing. Illumination, all they do is make $1 billion movies.
But looking at this list, it is the only non-Disney movie in that top 5.
Which again says that Disney conquers the world.
Yeah.
So, Chad, let's move away from box office. So, we got the news last week or a couple of weeks ago that JJ is going to return. He's going to come back for episode 9. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, JJ Abrams had signed a $10 million creative development deal with Paramount to direct his next feature film. Do you know what happened to that $10 million developmental contract he signed with Paramount?
As far as I understood, it's still there. He's just not doing anything.
Do you know how much they got in compensation for allowing JJ to leave?
Nothing.
Less than like 9 figures.
Well, this is what happens when you're not the mouse. Because Paramount's not in like, what are they going to do? Are they going to hassle Disney? What's the last big Paramount movie? Well,
you could do a couple of things. One, you could say he's under contract with us and do the old studio system thing and be like, no, and prevent the guy from doing it. Or you can hold Disney hostage and say, you've got no one else. So if you're going to take him, you're going to give us all $10 million back for it because we know you can afford it. And JJ has to sign a promissory agreement that his next feature is a Paramount release. Mm-hmm. Like, one of those things need to happen. It's not just like, here's $500,000, go away.
But the fact that it didn't happen leads me to believe that Paramount doesn't think they can make that happen. Even though they, just hearing what you said logistically is
just
like,
at least from a business standpoint, like, come on, man, try. Like, you got the high ground here. No pun intended for Star Wars. But, like, you've got the high ground. You've got him locked up under creative contract. So they have to compensate you if they want him. You should demand the full value of his creative in contract that you paid for him.
Well,
this is the equivalent of like the Buccaneers saying, we want John Gruden, and the Raiders being like, okay, give us, you know, your kicker and you can have him. Like, no, that's not the way that should work.
So, well, what's to say they didn't try? And this is what...
According to all the trades, the dude was just like, well, I don't want to be a prick and tell JJ he can't do it. And I'm going to take the leap of faith that he'll be true to his word. And when he's done, he'll come back and give us his next movie. And he's been great working with us with the Cloverfield universe. And so we want to continue working with him. Problem is, JJ's output for Paramount has not matched the expectations. Oh, no. That they thought it would. I mean, when they signed him to that deal back in 2006, his first deal in 2006, they thought they were getting Spielberg for the 21st century. And he hasn't exactly hit those kind of numbers and acclaim.
So was his first movie under his deal Star Trek?
Cloverfield.
Cloverfield was the first one? Mm-hmm. So it's Cloverfield, Star Trek.
Star Trek Into Darkness, MI3.
So Super 8's under that too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not as bad.
And Super 8 didn't even make $300 million worldwide. Yeah.
I mean, the number of things he's done is not as bad as I thought. Because when I didn't read the whole thing. I meant to read it, but I saw the...
Yeah, it's Cloverfield. It's Cloverfield, Super 8, Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, MI3.
Okay, so MI3 would have been the...
Second.
Cloverfield's before MI3?
Right.
I don't know why I think MI3 came first. But,
Or maybe he was just a producer. Didn't Matt Reeves direct Cloverfield?
Yes.
Matt Reeves directed Cloverfield. JJ was just a producer.
Okay, so... But when I originally heard it, I'm like, okay, so all they got of him was the two Star Trek movies, and he was that was pretty much it. Which sounds a lot worse than what that is. But still, that's not great, considering that...
Well, the MI3 revitalized that franchise. Star Trek, the reboot in 2009, which was delayed by the writer's strike, it restarted that franchise. Into Darkness destroyed it. And Super 8 is a passion project of his, which is a better film than people give it credit for, but it wasn't a huge financial success. I mean, he hasn't put a string of films together like Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and The Color Purple, all within his like first three films.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they were expecting.
I mean, yeah. But part of that is that, I mean, maybe their expectations were just like a wee bit too high. But, I mean, swing for the fences, sometimes you will.
But I just can't get over the fact that you got basically nothing back in allowing him to walk away. Which is a leap of faith on your part that he'll look favorably on that and come back and help you out. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. But, like, still, that's just no.
I mean, just believing in people, I think that, you know, that if this was not on such a big stage, that would be fine. It will work. Nobody will ever hear about it. And he probably does come back and he does fulfill his contract and do whatever he's going to do. It's just the fact that since we're on the biggest stage, since you're dealing with Star Wars, that, yeah, everybody's going to see it and the optics of it don't look good. So that's where you lose.
You could have held Disney hostage for whatever you wanted and demanded that they pay it, or you weren't going to contractually release him. And you could have gotten at least your $10 million back and a promise from him to come back.
True.
But you didn't. You just took a leap of faith. And hopefully JJ's a good guy and lives up to it.
I think he will. It's just, I mean, these movies take up...
Three years. Two and a half now.
Yeah, 2.5 for this. So that is just, you have to wait a long time before you get something out.
It was about that because he got hired in January of 2013. For episode 7, and they had to have that out by December of 2015. So that's about 2 years.
So that means if he does start, he's going to do this. That's 2.5 years gone. So you're probably looking at like another 2 years before you get.
You're looking
something
at 2020 maybe.
If you're lucky, I think you're looking more like 2021, 2022 before you get something out. That's the part that's
now. The benefit is that he has taken his break. I mean, he did Force Awakens, and then he, which was the conclusion of working for 10 years straight, from 2007 to 2015, he worked for like just straight, no break, and so he took this break, and so maybe you can get another 8-year run out of him where he just keeps working.
Yeah, maybe, if that's the case, then it'll be closer to 2020, if it's not something,
and they need to have something in the pipeline ready for him to just hand to him when he's ready.
But then part of the deal is like he just kind of does what he wants, so he can make up whatever he wants.
Well, I mean, part of it is their deal is the Cloverfield universe is included in that. So we got Particles Still to Come or whatever they renamed it. So, but I just found that interesting that like. You know, and the art of the deal, you came up pretty short there.
I mean, it's Paramount. Most people don't really think it's not.
This is the same studio that has Transformers.
And that's the only franchise I can think of them having.
They have Star Trek, but they have put it back on ice after Beyond did not make them the money that they were hoping it would make.
I mean,
and the Turtles franchise is back on ice.
Yeah. So, I mean, Transformers has been their
money. And the G.I. Joe franchise is on ice.
Yeah, that's... Maybe it's back off ice since, hopefully, Bay gets to walk away, and now we can finally put G.I. Joe and Transformers together and get me excited again. But we'll crawl before we walk and see what happens to Bumblebee. But, I mean, so I know Paramount's an old studio, and they should have this certain image and stuff to people, but it doesn't.
Well, the problem is they don't have what they don't have what Universal has. They don't have what Marvel, Disney has, Lucasfilm, Disney has. They don't have what Sony has. They don't have this huge back catalog of... they have a huge back catalog of tremendous hits, but they're not a lot of franchises in those hits.
Yeah.
I mean, they're some of the most classic films ever produced under the Paramount banner, but they're not franchises. Mm-hmm. Now, I say that, and with a very heavy heart, I will say they own most of John Hughes' stuff, which they could, if they wanted to, traffic in 80s nostalgia and remake. I mean, there is a guy in Kevin Hart who's running around right now talking about a Great Outdoors remake. So, they could traffic in that and do that, but as far as, like, you look at Universal, Universal had $1 billion year, mainly off of Jurassic World and Furious 7. And they have those properties, and they have Minions, and they have Despicable Me, and they have, you know, Back to the Future, and they have Jurassic Park, and they have, you know, all kinds of different... They have all kinds of different franchise properties they can revitalize and use. If they wanted to ever strike a deal with Disney and make another Hulk movie, they could do that too. They have options. Sony has options. They have Ghostbusters, which they tried and failed with. They have the Jump Street franchise. They have Men in Black. They have options that they can explore and do. You know, obviously Disney has Indiana Jones and Star Wars and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and their own animated library that they can turn around and do live-action retellings of. You know, and their live-action movies if they ever wanted to redo those. Like, they have a huge back catalog. Paramount doesn't have that. Off the top of my head, they have Transformers, G.I. Joe, Mask, which I assume they have Mask included in those rights.
It's all the Hasbro stuff.
Right. So yeah. They have all the Hasbro stuff. They have the TMNT stuff with Nickelodeon. And they have Transformers. And that's it. And Star Trek.
Is it them that has the Masters of the Universe that's supposed to come out next year?
Maybe. That would sound about right, actually.
That I don't think is going to ever see the light of day.
McGee's Masters of the Universe?
Well, no, they got... McGee's off of it. They kicked McGee off, but they kept the same date. But there's no movement on this movie at all.
Sounds like something that's going to be moved off the calendar. They just haven't told Box Office Mojo yet.
Yeah. It's disappointing. I like that. But, yeah, I get the point with Paramount, but it's, you know.
So let's move on. Staying in the Star Wars universe, Rian Johnston has completed work officially, rap production. It's a tight lead on The Last Jedi. Your thoughts on the most drama-free production in Lucasfilm Disney history?
That is why this made it onto the list, because it's really uneventful, because nothing happened in this movie. Nothing from start to finish. There's been no drama with this movie. Rian Johnston put up a picture of showing him and the editing crew, the big finish sign behind them, and it's done. We're 2.5 months out? The movie is completely done. It's sitting in the can somewhere on Disney's lot. Just chilling.
Protected.
Yeah, protected. But no problems. Nothing at all. Meanwhile, the rest of the Star Wars universe production, you know, it's like a tire fire. Every other day something's going on. So this is to be commended that in these turbulent times at Lucasfilm, the biggest thing they have going on right now is the one that has No problems.
And you know the crowd is going to go nuts if we get episodes 8, Return of the Last Jedi, in December. And it's awesome and it's amazing. And then they're like, we've got to go back to JJ now. Oh.
Yeah, this is why I would have been like, I understand Kathleen Kennedy had to respect his wishes and be like, you know, I need a break. I can't do this quick turnaround. Maybe that was an extra year, maybe. But I understand all that, but I would have been like, no, how many Brinks trucks do I need to put to your house? Because that's what's going to happen. You're not, look.
Name your price.
You can keep telling me no. Every time you tell me no, there's another truck coming up to your house. I'm putting them right in front of your door. You're not going anywhere until you tell me yes. But, you know, she didn't go that route. But, and she knows far more than I do, so I'll trust her. But if it was me, he's going to have to be Scrooge McDuck to get out of his house. He's going to swim out that much.
And that's, I think, it's, and we'll get our second trailer October 9th, it looks like.
Yeah.
The Vikings and Bears game on Monday Night Football. And tickets will probably go on sale that night as well, mm-hmm. which would mean we could start looking at pre-sale numbers and tracking those and comparing those against Force Awakens pre-order numbers, which will be an interesting comparison. And we can start building the hype train because we're through Force Friday. A new trailer and a tickets going on sale is the next part. And then we just really start the countdown to the episode 8.
Yep, that'll be it. And again, it's kind of strange to me because I know that a lot of these big movies, like, they're pretty much finished, like, you know, a month, a few weeks ahead of the release date. That this movie, it's really just sitting there right now. If we wanted to, and we could find a way, just go there and watch the whole completed movie right now. It's not even October yet, and the movie is just sitting there. It's just kind of amazing to me. And again, it had no other problems.
What's going to happen critic screenings were done like on the Tuesday before the Thursday it got released.
Yeah.
You think they'll go that route again?
Yes. Why change anything? It does. Star Wars is critic proof. Normally we hear, you know, the screen is coming up 2 days before. It's like, ooh, they don't want nobody to talk about this one. Star Wars is like, no.
No, we're preserving all our secrets.
Yeah, we don't want you to talk about it, but not in that way. We don't want you to say anything. When everybody finds out, that's when you'll find out. So, yeah, they're going to do the same thing. Why change anything? It's not going to, $2 billion? Yeah, it didn't hurt them at all. It's not going to hurt them this time.
All right, so let's move on. So, Josh Boone's New Mutants movie. It's a thing. It's been filming. It's been talked about. Like, it's the least talked about of all the X-Men upcoming products.
Oh, they're done shooting now.
Right. Your thoughts on this statement from Fox CEO. Quote, New Mutants is about these teenagers who are just coming into their powers. It's like watching mutants go through adolescence. Where have I heard that before? And they have no impulse control. Where have I heard that before? So they're dangerous. Where have I heard that before? The only solution is to put them in a breakfast club detention / cuckoo nest institutional setting. It protects the people on the outside, but it's strange and combustible inside. The genre is like a haunted house movie with a bunch of hormonal teenagers. We haven't seen it as a superhero movie whose genre is more like The Shining than We're Teenagers, Let's Save the World. Your thoughts, sir, on this statement, which pretty much sounds like we're going to make The Gifted.
Yeah, well, that whole first part about, you know, them being like adolescents and all that stuff, that, I mean, mutants
in an institution.
Well,
this rings of Gifted and end of what's the other one? Legion.
Well, these are the institution part, yeah. But the adolescence thing, that's like it's the core part of who mutants are. Their powers manifest the same time as normal people go through puberty, so that would be adolescence. So these are things that are repeated when you're talking about a, you know, no quote unquote new group of mutants. So that all fits because that's what the mutant powers were a metaphor for. It's like coming of age and That's why they triggered when they did. So that's to be expected. It's the rest of the stuff that's like interesting.
Because we've heard some of this before, though.
We have
the broad strokes of like warehouse being involved and like, you know, having to fight your way out of the warehouse and horror movie. Like, these are things that have been out there from Boone himself for a little while.
It's because the movie is going to be based off of apparently the most popular New Mutant story. I've never read it, but there's something about them like being trapped or abducted or something, and they have to survive pretty much.
Basically, picture the Wolverine segment from Apocalypse, and magnify that by like 5 times.
I guess something like that. Yeah.
Because once you let Wolverine out the cage, he has very creepy half naked moments with Jean Grey.
Yeah, that was stupid. Still is stupid. Never not be stupid. That was really dumb, Bryan Singer. But yeah, so I wish I knew more about the story, but I mean, it sounds in line with the story.
A lot of quiet for a movie that's due out in March.
Yeah, that's what always intrigued me about this, is that they, you know, normally we see people doing these movies, they shoot them a year out. This movie is shot, I mean, they're done shooting now. Post-production from, let's say, October till February, that's, what, 4 or 5 months? It can be done. It's just not something we've seen with these type of movies recently. So, to me, it tells me that it's not going to be, like, as heavily effects-driven as previous movies. But I just don't know what to expect from this. Because it is Fox, and they're doing these new things with the mutants, and this is clearly another direction. So, like, I have no idea what to expect. I'm kind of intrigued to see a trailer. I don't know when we'll get one, but I'm just kind of... I hope it doesn't feel rushed because it's being shot in such a compact amount of time.
Right. But, I mean, you don't need... I mean, outside of the powers that would have to manifest, and we don't have a clear definition of whose power sets are being utilized, I mean, there's not a whole lot of effect shots in a haunted house movie.
Yeah, I know we've covered the casting before, but I can't remember everybody in it outside of Macy Williams, who's playing Wolfsbane, and Wolfsbane is as practical an effect as you're going to be. Think of Arya Stark as a werewolf, because that's what she is. The rest of them, I'm not sure. I know Magic's in it. Colossus's sister. I can see how you can cut corners with her effects. And I want to say Cannonball's in it. And I would think he would be the most... Out of the ones that I remember, he's the most effects-driven. But his effects are going to be similar to what happened with Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Deadpool. And they got away with that on, you know, shoestring budget. So that's not impossible.
Right. I mean, I think it's just interesting because you're still going to make this fit within the timeline and the continuity. So,
do you? Who has continuity in Fox? Who? You tell me who, so I can tell you no.
Well, James McAvoy is going to be in the movie.
So?
So his bald Professor X will be there, which will place it firmly in the time period following Apocalypse.
But he's going to be bald Professor X. This is, from what I'm assuming is, this movie takes place in present day.
The indications we've gotten are that it basically takes place after the day events of Apocalypse. Not necessarily present day, but not necessarily after but probably before the events of Dark Phoenix.
Okay, so here we're going to lie the problem. If
Ben's in the river, leading to Ewan McGregor, leading to Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart as old men in 2000?
I'm going to assume that not every kid in this movie is going to die. So it takes place after Apocalypse, but before Dark Phoenix. And McAvoy's in there, which means he's Xavier and is like guiding these people. And these kids would probably they'll be a little bit younger than the crop of X-Men we have now. And if those X-Men are going to be dealing with aliens from outer space, it would seem the reason that the New Mutants would be there to help them take part in that. However, we know, because they're shooting at the same time, none of that's going to happen. So, what friggin' sense does that make? And that is why, sir, I look at you and say, What continuity?
But the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would, and the Defenders should be able to help the Avengers with Thanos. But we know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, but while we know that's not going to happen, we know where these people are when other things happen. And in those Marvel shows, the Defenders are pretty much like, you know, I don't want to be like a big superhero. Why don't we call the big superheroes to do some of this crazy crap? And the Avengers, Tony Stark in Homecoming, he's pretty much like, you know, there's stuff that's below our pay grade. So you've created this buffer within this continuity. It's like, we stay in our lane, they stay in theirs. Would it be nice to team together? Sure. But we've created this buffer. You don't have to like it, but it's there. This is like, nope, I just want to do this. But we got, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. But I want him from over there to come and do this with me too. But wait, but then that means I don't care what you want. This is how this is going to go. We got it. We good? We good? All right, good. I'm going to make this movie over here. You figure out the rest of that crap over there. And that's how these movies are made. There's no continuity. It's just a bunch of the same people in these movies. And it's up to you to be like, do I want to make this a linear line or not? The way this is going, I don't. Fine, Fox. They've beaten us enough to be like, what's continuity?
This is a true statement, especially considering that there is the X-Mansion in Deadpool 2. In Deadpool.
And Deadpool repeatedly makes jokes about the different versions of X-Men and who's supposed to be there and who's not and all this other stuff. So, yeah. Deadpool knows there's a sense of continuity. He also knows that continuity in this universe is terrible.
Hence the reason why you have the Hugh Jackman mask.
Yeah. Which is funny. I can live with that.
Deadpool. All right, so let's move on. So there's we just covered the box office not too long ago. We talked about Guardians and Spider-Man both having crossed the $800 million plane this year. What does that mean for Taika Waititi's Thor Ragnarok?
I don't know. I can't really get a bead on what this movie is going to make, because it's coming off of the other Thor movies, which were always on the lower end of box office. However,
you can look it up. I don't think either one of the first two Thor movies made over 250 domestic.
I think that's right. But you're adding Thor. You're adding Hulk. You're in the marketing so far, you're giving off the vibes of the cosmic and all the things that people like about Guardians. And you're like kind of teasing that, you know, this is going to play important parts going to Avengers down the line. But does that...
Or may not be a giant purple guy involved.
Yeah. So, but is that enough to get them to like 800-900 million? I don't know. I think 8's like the limit. Maybe 850, but I think that's as high as it goes.
Which would be like 4 times what any Thor movie has made.
Yes. Which has to be seen as a huge win for Marvel.
Which would speak to the reason why Mr. Waititi is now a much wanted director.
It's
a huge leap from Hunt for the Wider Pool and What We Do in the Shadows to Thor Ragnarok. And it's a big, even bigger leap for the next project that he looks to be circling.
Yeah, Warner Brothers is tapping him to do Akira. But once they, you know, when they announced it like this, it's pretty, unless, like, things have got to fall apart, like, pretty bad for it not to happen.
We're talking about the same studio that broke down with Matt Reeves and then rehired him.
I understand that. I'm trying to get... There's this rabbit hole that keeps showing up. I'm not going for it. I'm not doing it. But as far as what he's in talks, I know Akira is like a popular anime and people have really strong opinions about it. I don't, because I've never seen it and I never cared to see it. And I hear this movie's coming out. I don't even care to see that. I just want, since Taika's involved, I would like it to be
good. Can't be worse than Ghost in the Shell. So,
I guess not. I mean, I don't, I'm not an anime guy, so I know the names of these, like Ghost in the Shell.
The issue that you run into with anime is, even if you do a live action Dragon Ball Z or things like this, is a lot of that stuff is so rooted in Chinese, Japanese, and Asian culture, and Hollywood doesn't tend to like to put those kind of people in the front of the camera.
Nah, not so much.
And so that tends to anger your fan base, and if you start from a place where your fan base has no desire to see the movie, and the general audience, it's a tough sell to help them figure out what the hell this thing is, that leaves you in a difficult position. Because it's like the with video game movies, and we're going to talk about Tomb Raider here in a second. Like, if you start veering too closely to, like, helping out the fans, like fan service, you're going to lose the general audience. If you veer too tightly to what the general mainstream audience is, and you do things to attract more general audience members, you run the risk of deeply alienating your fan base, which should be like the guaranteed ticket money. So, I mean, it would take a change of philosophy for studios, major studios, to take on more anime adaptations, because it's a bad look to do freaking Scarlett Johansson in the lead of Ghost in the Shell.
It is. It's a terrible look, but
it makes sense from a business standpoint. It's easier to sell a movie with that on the front, but I mean, we should be in a place in a culture and, you know, in a diversity standpoint where, you know, you could put an Asian lead as an in a movie that isn't about martial arts and have it make money.
I mean, I think at this point in time, I think that's where we're at. I don't, like, people, yeah, I see it from the business standpoint, but at this point, this business model needs to change. Kind of like, you know, Disney is doing with Aladdin. I don't even remember the guy's name that's going to be Aladdin. But he is a Middle Eastern descent, and he's going to be starring in this movie. So,
which offsets the Indian British woman who is going to be Jasmine.
Yeah, I mean, she's got, like I said last time, she's got the heritage part, at least half of it, so I can live with that. But, I mean, they're still relatively unknown, which is why you compensate that by throwing Will Smith in there. So I don't know what parts they have like that in Akira that you can do that with, but if you have to have a name, you put a name in there where you can, but still stay true to the source material where you don't upset the fans. Because, again, if the fans turn on it first, generally, even though they're not the majority, it tends to sour the rest of the movie, i.e. see Ghost in the Shell. But I've also heard that movie sucks, so there's that too.
Indeed, but I mean, if Watiti were to get on board, I think it would definitely be a profile raiser for people.
Yeah, if Thor makes 800, they're going to be cutting flips in Marvel a lot.
Yeah, because Thor and Thor the Dark World are both in the bottom 10, the bottom 5 of the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I mean, Dark World made 644 worldwide. Thor made 449. Yeah, they'll take
it. Well, I mean, if you take a $200 million increase, there's a $200 million increase right there, roughly, from Thor 1 to Thor 2.
Yeah.
And if you do another $200 million increase from Thor 2 to Thor 3, that puts it right in the generalized ballpark of $850 million. So,
yeah. So, I don't know. Well, with Akira, we'll see. I wish I had more to offer
it would just raise the profile for most people.
Yeah, but I think Taika's profile is going to be pretty raised after November anyway.
So, Chad, there was the Vikander Tomb Raider trailer finally dropped. Good vibe, good music, good pacing. Everything looked the way it's supposed to look. Very differentiated itself enough from the Lara Croft Tomb Raider from Angelina Jolie. It's going to clearly be an origin story. Your thoughts on the trailer and what you saw from a movie that is written by someone who's currently helping on Captain Marvel?
So, I've got to say this first. I liked the look of it. I particularly like Alicia Vikander. She looks like what I imagine Lara Croft would look. But just speaking on the trailer, like, the trailer, it's fine. It just, it didn't blow me away. But it didn't make me not look forward to the movie. But it's just like, you know, just stayed the course, which is kind of disappointing because I was like, I wanted to be like more moved to go see the movie.
But maybe it's a good thing to underplay expectations so that we don't end up in a situation where we are like Assassin's Creed, where it's like, this is gonna, or World of Warcraft. Like, this is gonna be the one movie that changes it all, and we get Splinter Cell and all these other various video game adaptations, and then bomb.
I am not slighting them at all for this trailer. It's there. It's got people talking about it. That's what it's supposed to do. Hold back on your first one. You just established that, you know, Tomb Raider's here. Tomb Raider's coming. This is our Tomb Raider. Do that, and then maybe the second trailer you ramp it up a little bit. Nothing wrong with the trailer at all. I really like
play up Alicia. Strong female lead right now in this post Wonder Woman environment.
Yes,
play up strong female lead.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of strong female lead, it's a guy down in Australia right now who's communicating with the press via Skype or phone call because he's busy making four movies at one time. And
see, this is where us doing the podcast didn't help. The face I made when you said this, because again, I don't believe none of it.
So James Cameron, who is currently sitting on a lot somewhere with Sigourney Weaver and Zoe Saldana and a bunch of blue makeup and green screen, has apparently taken full on like hands involved producer credit on Terminator 6. This seems to be his baby. And it seems like he recruited some help, as he has asked and he has received Linda Hamilton will return to the role of Sarah Connor for Terminator 6, title to be declared later. Your thoughts, sir, on Linda Hamilton returning to a role she has not inhabited since 1992, in a role which, in canon, says that she died between the events of T2 and T3. In which her casket is empty and full of is doesn't have a body and it has a caseload full of weapons when they go to dig it up in T3.
So, I'm going to address just the Linda Hamilton part of this first.
And Schwarzenegger, I'm sure, is coming.
Yeah, good for her. I'm glad that they're bringing her back.
Would you like to hear James's statement on why he brought her back?
Yes, we can do that now because I have some work for him later.
As meaningful as she was to gender and action stars everywhere back then, it's going to make a huge statement to have that seasoned warrior that she's become return. There are 50-year-old, 60-year-old guys out there killing bad guys, but there isn't an example of that for women. Keep in mind, this is coming off the context of him saying Wonder Woman was not a great movie, and actually quite chauvinist in some ways.
Yeah, this was a good way for him to try to ingratiate himself back in with the people that are like really Wonder Woman fans and like, look, I said I made strong female heroes and I'm bringing one back. And not only am I bringing her back, now she's doing things like Schwarzenegger and Stallone did where they've aged up and they're still action stars. You don't see that with women. Here, I'm doing this. I'm pioneering this thing again.
How old was Sigourney the last time she played Ripley? 40?
Sigourney's up. Yeah, she's pushing 70 now, so yeah.
She would have been like 45 or 50.
Somewhere around that, yeah. Which is still younger than Sigourney is. I mean,
Linda is.
Than Linda is now. So, good for her. And, you know, that character is beloved.
Beloved for the TV series.
Yeah. People love her in T2, but Sarah Connor Chronicles, which was, you know, the only post T2 Terminator that seems to be done right. So it's not just her, it's the character. So I think that's all good things.
And we still have no idea where this is. Because my advice to them, although continuity nerds hate it, my advice to them would be to ignore all of the previous three movies.
And that's what they said.
Because T3, while it's okay, an okay airplane movie, very clearly says she died in between the events of T2 and T3. I can't remember if I think they might have said that she committed suicide, something, and her casket was full of guns when they opened it. What, there was no body. So, you know, that's the only way you're going to get around that is to just say this takes place after the events of T2, before Skynet has become aware, and you're going to have to cast a youngish John Connor again.
Yeah, I don't know if they said it in this setting, because when he made this quote, it was at T2, the 3D experience. They did a showing where he was there and Tim Miller were there, and they talked afterwards. And that's when he said this. And I don't remember if they said it then or it was later, but they've said that everything after 2, it's gone. It's done. So, again, that's the way to do it. You know, people don't like those. You can get rid of those, but minimal people being upset.
I mean, it's the same way that Blomkamp was going to do with Alien. He's going to ignore Alien versus Predator and Aliens.
Was he going to get rid of Alien 3 too?
He was going to go back to where Ripley and Nate were still alive and all that. Like, I think he was going to get rid of... Yeah, I think he was going to get rid of 3 and Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
And definitely wasn't going to acknowledge Alien versus Predator.
And I'm fine with all of that. I'm still hopeful for it, because it seems like Cameron is taking more of an active role in this. And Tim Miller, I want to see him do well. So all of that's good. Now, as for James Cameron himself, and while the comment is all well and good,
Mr. Dances with Wolves with Blue People.
Yeah, this all comes off as, you know, I was like, as like a, oh, I really messed up when I said this Wonder Woman thing. Good thing I had this ace in my pocket to try to get people back on my side. And that's fine if you want to get people back on your side, but you would think for somebody that does all this stuff, he would have like thought more about it before he said it. Because what would have happened if he came out and said, I really like Wonder Woman and does all this and it reflects my character Sarah Connor and blah, blah, blah. And people were like, that's a good quote from James Cameron. And then he's like, I'm bringing back Sarah Connor and I'm bringing back Linda Hamilton. She's going to be this aged female action star that nobody ever does. So instead of digging himself out this hole, he ingratiates himself that much more. He's propped up even higher. So people are that much more excited for this thing. But it just comes off as, I had to fix this. Got to do it now. Let's just do it right now.
It does. Have we seen pictures of him in Australia?
No, I ain't looking for them either, because I don't think they exist.
Do we know that the New Zealand government gave him his tax breaks?
Again, I just
said... Christmas 2020 is a long way away.
There's nothing you can show me that's going to make me believe this. We already know most of this movie takes place in front of green screens. Therefore, you can put whatever you want on it. You can show me picture James Cameron talking to people in mocap suits, and I'm be like, you're lying to me. He's sitting on a back lot in L.A., and he got his janitor dude to put this on and be like, let's get him off my back for a little while. I'm talking to you. And you can make it look like New Zealand. Put a Welcome New Zealand sign in the background. How are we supposed to know? No, James, I'm not buying it. I need footage. And not just a little bit. I need the movie. Like, I don't care if you show me a trailer. I don't believe it. You recut the first one and gave me this trailer. I need footage. Unless they're sitting up there dancing with blue people in the water in this trailer, I need footage. I need the movie. That's the only way I'm believing this.
Because someone cut him a check at Fox.
Unlimited check. Again, I don't blame you, Mr. Fox person. Look at the $1 billion list. He's up there. I get it. But how old is James Cameron? How long is it taking to make these movies? How many of these movies does he want to make? Why am I giving him this money?
And not only that, how many people do you see cosplay at conventions as Na'vi?
Oh, well, Fox wouldn't know because they don't ever go, so...
This is true.
So, yeah.
So, Chad, let's move on to our final item on the rundown there. So, there was, in addition to the Tomb Raider trailer this week, there was another trailer that dropped this week. Would you like to tell the good people what trailer dropped this week?
Oh, man. So, we got a trailer for another movie that's coming out in December that, you know, if I'm being honest, I really care less about this movie. However, the man sitting next to me is going to work himself up into a tizzy about this movie. So, knowing how much I've suffered with DC over the years, I'm just kind of taking pleasure in this pain. It's not right. I'm not saying it's okay, but it's what we're gonna do anyway. And this trailer would be for Jumanji. Welcome to the Jungle.
Welcome to the Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
Off the song that's been played in both trailers.
Mm-hmm.
So Chad, cake. Before we get to cake, because cake is very disturbing, we've had questions for a very long time about this movie. Because the last time we saw the physical board game of Jumanji, two French kids were walking along the beach in France and picked this game up and took it home and decided they were going to play it. And that's where we leave the movie. That's the last shots of the movie. And yet we get this trailer, which is a sequel. Let me get this straight. A sequel. And so the sequel is set with a video game, not a board game. So we all kind of wondered how they were going to fix that. This trailer makes it appear as if there is still a board game somewhere. That it is sitting on some kid's desk somewhere, because who plays board games anymore? Why? It's like Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlets. How can there be one in Odin's vault and then one not in Odin's vault that Thanos is in possession of? Don't you have to pay that off at some point? Same way here. There cannot be a video game Jumanji and a board game Jumanji. Like, it is a cursed board game. It would not have morphed itself into something that looks like a Super Nintendo. And by the way, it does look exactly like a Super Nintendo. It doesn't even look like a PS4. It looks like a Super Nintendo. And so it wherever that board game is, because they're not very certain in the trailer. Trailer that literally just cuts from, like, here's your answer about the board game to really good action shots from this action movie that's going to make no sense. Okay? It's cool. I whatever. You want to sell me on that, that's fine. So, because we're dealing with a video game, and we're dealing with avatars located within a video game that are representative of children playing the video game, the ultimate RPG, every RPG has character descriptions for their characters or their avatars when you choose them. They have a list of strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, and you choose based on what matches, whatever. So they go through, in the trailer, they go through everybody's strength and weakness. And they make, you know, the girls look like they can really kick butt and do great action, and make the guys look big and tall and strong. And they make everybody look like they're very smart and capable and know what they're doing. Give everybody agency. And then they get to Kevin Hart's character. Chad, what's Kevin Hart's biggest superpower, according to his little chart?
He didn't have any, as far as I remember.
He did. He did. The little cards.
Oh, he carries the rock stuff.
He carries the rock stuff, and also his biggest weakness
is that he's
cake.
Yeah, he's like allergic to cake or some crap like
that. No. He just said cake. Which is gets everybody to laugh, because it's like, why would that be on the title card for the RPG role player game avatar in a game that is based off of an evil board game? Do you know why cake is his weakness?
Because it makes him blow up.
It makes him blow up. It makes him blow up. You are given three lives in this video game. And he uses one of them because he accidentally eats cake and blows up and kills innocent people in a village in this video game because he ate cake and blew up.
He killed anybody.
He blew up! There was a cloud! There was fire! There was sound and fury! Because he ate cake! He did not contribute anything to the team. He ate cake. And you know what? The crazy thing is, I'm fairly certain now that the whole big climax of this movie is going to be that he's down to one life. And he's got the bad guys coming to him. And he's going to be like, yo, bros, go on. And then he's going to walk with this, their camera's going to focus on him, and Kevin Hart's going to walk toward the enemies, and he's going to lure them in. He's going to look back, and The Rock's going to wave, and The Rock's going to shed a little tear, and then Kevin Hart's going to shed a little tear, and then Kevin Hart's going to turn to the bad guys, and he's going to shove a big piece of cake in his mouth, and he's going to explode, giving up his last life to destroy the bad guys and ensure that everybody gets to safety. That's fairly certain. Well, I'm fairly certain that is what's going to happen now. Because he eats cake! There was no eating cake in the original. Robin Williams' big thing is like, we have got to finish this dadgum game so I can go back to 1952 and run pair of shoes and become a healthy, normal adult with my wife and my big house and a very nice shoe company. Like, that's his whole deal. If you stop playing the game, you die. Like, I'm going to get in the face of a little 8-year-old kid who's scared because I need to get him to roll the dice, because if he doesn't roll the dice, I can never get back to my old life. That's not present here. It's let's feed Kevin Hart cake and make him explode in a very bad CGI explosion. This movie is going to suck. This movie is going to make... There's not even going to be any monkeys. We saw the rhinos. That's good. But we did not. We haven't seen the monkeys yet. We have not seen the hunters. We do not even know technically who the bad guys are of this movie yet. We don't even know how they get out of the video game. Like, is it a thing where they have to reach the other side of the island, or they have to reach a checkpoint or something? I don't know. You know why? Because the people did not think of this. The writers and the developers of this film did not think of that. They just wanted to make something that looked like Jumanji for the 21st century. There will be no Robert Parrish shoes. There will be no Robert Parrish singer. There will be no mentions of Robin Williams. There will be no mention of the hunter. There will be no mentions of monkeys driving cars. There will just be Kevin Hart eating cake and exploding, pretending to be a teenage girl. And I'm very much looking forward to documenting the disparity between the second weekend of Star Wars Episode 8 and Jumanji. And Jumanji's wee little total there. They already fired one director off of this. I'd rather hit seen his vision than this. And I don't even know what his vision was. But I guarantee you that his vision did not include Kevin Hart eating cake and exploding.
You know, when I watched this trailer, I knew there'd be a lot of things you were upset with. I never thought the cake would be the one.
He eats cake. Even in the context of a video game movie, that is the stupidest power I have ever heard of in my life. They couldn't even do that on Wreck-It Ralph and get away with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I'm going to say this. I'm going to counter a few points.
This movie's going to get crushed.
Oh, well, yeah, it's going to get crushed. I think that's... You don't release this movie in the wake of Star Wars if you think it's going to do, like, gangbusters. You'd put it in the wake of Star Wars to catch the coins that fall out of people's pockets. That's what they're going for with this. So, I'll only counter with this. In the trailer, they were on some Dr. Ian Malcolm stuff when they were saying, to paraphrase him, the game finds a way. So, what I gather is, Jumanji was put in some kid's room, and he never touched it for years. And the game was like, F this, what do they like? And if we're going to say that it's around the time after the movie, oh, there's a Super Nintendo. I'm going to look like that. And they still didn't play with it, because by the time that would have happened, it would have been, oh, we have PlayStations and PlayStation 2s. What is this? Put in a box. Send it somewhere. Now, the whole France thing, I got nothing for you.
How would that box have ended up in the basement of a high school?
My best guess is that, you know, we saw the French people. But they were French people, but they were in Ohio, and they found it on the beach in Ohio, and that's why we got it there. That's all I got, and I'll just stick with that. And it got in a box, and it's somehow migrated to a school, and it sucked them in. Now, from that point on, yes, this is utterly ridiculous, but I don't care, because...
The first movie's not utterly ridiculous. The first movie's based off of every single one of these things... traumatizing children, scaring children, fearing that their lives are truly endangered.
I get that.
Like, and you're facing crocodiles and a crazy man who's coming after you with a gun because he wants to mount you on his wall.
That was kind of bad.
And monkeys who drive around in police cars.
But that is clearly not this.
No. And the only thing we have close enough is the rhinos. The stampede that happened in the first one.
So they tried this take, and it's going to be ridiculous. And they're clearly going for more over the top stuff, you know, and that's fine. I
get people like Goldberg and others who are like, it's not a cherished, beloved classic. It's, you know, a 90s movie that was there and it was fun for its time. And it's like, if you're 8 or 10 or 12 in 1996, that's a thing that, like, you really enjoyed. And it was meaningful to you in a way that E.T. was, or in a way that, you know, Goonies was. You know, something like that. Like, I'm not going to look down my nose at you because you like the 95 Jumanji movie. Like, the 95 Jumanji movie beget Xertha, which, you know, which Favreau used to propel himself to Iron Man. And is not a bad film, and is actually a better sequel to Jumanji than this will ever dream of being, because they kept a freaking board game. But, like, I don't, like... Yes, it is a classic to some people, and it is a very important film to some people, and it's a very big part of people's understanding of Robin Williams, too. For a whole generation, that's how they got into him. Started with the Genie, and then worked its way there.
Yeah, and, you know, I get all that, and...
And he killed himself, and so, you know... So all of his other projects take on more meaning, and... It's the first time the Aladdin and this, you're trying to do both of them that are very distinct Robin Williams characters.
And that's the inherent flaw of this movie, is that it's going to be linked to Robin Williams, and people have certain feelings about him and all of his performances, and most of them is you're not going to be able to do what he did. So this. Instead of trying to do that, they went completely
opposite. Well, I went on my rant when we found out that Kevin Hart and The Rock were going to be cast.
Yep.
And it's like, dudes, there's a subtlety and a nuance to Robin Williams' performance there. It's one of the best of his career. Because he's playing a broken, damaged man who was sent to the jungle as a child to be raised around the chaos that is Jumanji. And he came out of the board game 30 years later, and his old girlfriend's right there, and now he has to come to grips with the fact that his parents are dead. They died penniless because people stopped buying a pair of shoes because they believed that his parents had murdered him. Like, it's he comes at that and delivers a performance that is from a place of being a damaged person just trying to survive long enough to finish this game, to maybe get some semblance of his life back. And, you know, his interactions with Peter, and his interactions with the Kirsten Dunst character, and the interactions with his ex-girlfriend, who went batty afterwards and started consulting psychics, like, because no one believed her when she said she saw him get sucked into the game. Like, there's a nuance and a weight to his performance there that The Rock couldn't touch with a 25-foot pole, and Kevin Hart couldn't touch with a 50-foot pole. And that was my problem. Like, as soon as you did that, I knew you were moving in the, like, comes on HBO at 2 in the morning, you know, goofy, off-the-wall area of genre. Yeah.
And I get that.
Towards San Andreas.
Yeah. And for people that love Jumanji and see this and it's not what they want, I get it. And I will never tell them that they should get over it and just kind of get with it, because that's not what you want, and that's fine. Because there are going to be movies like Spider-Man 3 or Superman Returns. I went in there wanting something and I didn't get it, and I was upset, and, you know, that's fine. It's just going
to
be...
Are two examples of people who did not fundamentally understand the fan base and studios trying to achieve an objective nobody wanted to achieve. Shoehorning in Venom into a Spider-Man 3 doesn't work, especially when Raimi didn't want to do it. Same thing with Superman Returns. Same, you're wanting to pay homage to Christopher Reeve. He wanted to honor the legacy of the first two Superman movies. He wanted to do his take. He got into trouble with, you know, a gay guy directing a movie where he makes out Superman to be Jesus, while at the same time also having him creepily leer and look at his bastard son. So, like, that movie has flaws. Except for Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey's awesome. Lex Luthor. But, like, again, that was a studio just... It'd been, what, 15 years since they made a Superman movie? Super Quest for Peace is, like, what, 92?
I don't know. Quest for Peace is, like, 89.
Yeah. So you have 89 to 2005 before you do another Superman movie? Mm-hmm. I mean, so that was just clearly an indication of a studio trying to get a property going again. Like, Jumanji was never intended to be a property.
And I that
like you stretch it as far as you could considering the depth of the book.
Yeah, the book is it is really like a 22-page picture book, and that they made a movie out of that is amazing in its own. But we live in the age of IPs, and they want to go that way, and they want to do something completely different. So and you know most people that like love Jumanji probably won't like this, and that's fine. I would just advise them, not you because you're gonna have to not see this and then pretend it never happened.
Am I going to have to see this movie?
I'm not going to make you, but I know you're going to see it.
I can't comment on something I haven't seen.
That's the way it should be. Look, because if I don't have to see this movie, I ain't going to see it. So.
No, you will you will want to go see it because it's like Ghostbusters. You will want to just be sitting there with your popcorn just watching me fume.
Well, Ghostbusters, there was just a certain... There was a certain thing about seeing... If they could pull off what they were trying to pull off. This, I don't really care. So, I'd only be going to watch you stew. And I don't really want to do that, but I will.
For the good of the entire podcast.
Yes, you know.
All right, so that'll about do it for this week's podcast as we get ready closer and closer to the release of the new Star Wars trailer. T-Bob Abear will be joining us again very soon, so be on the lookout for that. And just... Get ready, folks. We're getting closer and closer to the run toward The Last Jedi. Be sure to be looking out for tickets soon.
Yeah.
All right. That'll about do it. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much. And James Cameron, please provide us with evidence that you are making Avatar movies. Thank you.
You can't provide enough for me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.